Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Bill Shimoda, NWT Pro, back on the show. It's been a minute since we had Bill on, so it's really, really fun for me to have Bill back on and get updates from him and have a great conversation. And, you know, every time I talk to Bill, I think back to, this podcast is a few years old now, and Bill was one of the first ever pros that agreed to come on and be on the podcast, and we'd never met, we'd never talked or anything like that, and he was cool to come on, and we've had some really, really great, really meaningful and really popular episodes with Bill over the years. Bill's been in the industry, you know, he's been a tournament angler for a very, very long time professionally. Go check out Bill Shimoda's social medias and check out all of his stuff to follow along on his tournament exploits, because the guy is an absolute stick. He's been around for a long time. That being said, let's get into this here. We've got Bill Shimoda. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River in the Northwest Angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Well, yeah, like I was just saying, it's been a minute since I've had you on, Bill. So, dude, what have you been up to? I mean, I've been seeing it all over the place. I want you to kind of get us up to speed with how the season's been going, all the extracurricular projects you got going on, all your day-to-day stuff between tournaments. Get us up to speed how things have been going this year so far, man.
Yeah, it has been a minute. It was funny because we were going to do one of these this spring. Yep. On boat rigging, because that's my jam, I guess, if you will. But I was so busy. Every year just gets busier and busier. I don't advertise at all. It's just word of mouth. Well, that just keeps building. So anyway, the rigging was, again, super busy. We chose not to do a show because I didn't want any more people reaching out to me with questions and stuff. I was pretty redline there. But yeah, busy. This spring again, rigging, and the stable mount company's doing great. And it's already July now. We're a few tournaments into the season. And for me, it's kind of been a pretty mediocre season. I had a really bad tournament on Lake Erie. So now, just like last year, I feel like I'm playing catch up in points the whole season. But it's all good. Still love doing it. And it's a lot of fun traveling with the guys. And, you know, it's always a challenge out there, especially this year with all the hard rules we're up against with these no call tournaments and two fish or three fish limit, four fish limit, so on. But it's been a little frustrating, but at the end of the day, I mean, who can complain about going fishing for 9-10 days every month and hanging out with your buddies? So it's all good. But yeah, this time of year, it slows down a little bit for me as far as the work stuff. And then, yeah, I'm basically a stay-at-home dad on top of everything else during the summer with the kids. So, you know, we're starting to get busy with that and dragging them around, and yeah, it's all good, man. Life's all good. Can't complain.
Yeah, dude. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of things that I want to get into, but, you know, right away, like when you're talking about, you know, some of the rule changes that you guys got in the NWT. Now, I don't particularly get into any real polarizing conversations on this podcast, but I am kind of curious, you know, I think, I guess, you know, for you, you've been doing this a long time. You've been fishing on a high level for a long time, even, you know, well before the NWT was a thing. The NWT, I guess it's been around long enough, but it hasn't been around forever. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're not an old guy by any means. You're in your prime, but yet you, you know, you've seen the industry since before the NWT started, high level walleye tournament fishing. Like some of these rule changes, I haven't had anybody like really fully explain them particularly yet. Maybe be curious to just spend like 10 minutes on that. And I guess what I'm ultimately curious about is, has there ever been anything like this before? And how do you sort of see it, you know, be making like the biggest impact or the biggest effect on like the outcomes of the tournaments?
So the easiest way I think to explain it. So what Taylor's talking about is we had in Lake Erie was five fish, call all you want. It's Lake Erie, right? But in Red Wing, we were only allowed to keep four fish, no call. And one over 20 inches only. And in Green Bay, we were only allowed to keep three fish, no call, no size limits. And then our next one on Sakakawea, it's going to be five fish, no call. So to put in perspective, there's never been a tournament that I can remember, and I've been doing this for a long time, that was even as strict as five fish, no call. We've always at least had one to play with. And even when you have only one or two to play with, it can be frustrating. But I can remember one time it was in an FLW championship in Bismarck. And that's when they did the 4 days, top 20 pros and cos fish day three. And then day four, you're by yourself. Okay. So there's one person, one limit, and no call. And that was a five fish limit, no call. And I'll never forget how frustrating that was. And that was five fish. And so now you go to, we'll start with Red Wing, was only four fish and one over 20. That was super frustrating. And now the reason that this happened, I mean, there's a lot of different angles to this, but the main reason that this happened was in recent years, people started talking about this party fishing rule or law that a lot of the states have, which basically means you can't catch somebody else's limit. So I can only catch my five, and then when I do and they're in the live well, then you have to catch your own five or whatever. So there's this party fishing law. And, you know, just in recent years, it started coming up all the time, and people started, you know, enforcing it in some tournaments, and it got to be a really hard thing to enforce because it can be a very gray area. It's not as simple as saying, okay, you catch your fish, you catch your fish. So like last year, or maybe it was the year before, I don't remember, but like we were on Lake Winnebago. So, and I think the deal was there, we could have five, you can keep five, each person could keep five, but you can have seven in the live well. So technically, if I caught five fish, I was done. And so you kind of had to keep your co-angler, or you wanted your co-angler to catch a couple of your fish for you somehow. And so it got to be a gray area. Okay, like if I cast my line out and I'm winding a crankbait and a fish latches on and I hand it to my co-angler, who really caught that fish? Did I catch it or did he catch it? And, you know, most of the feedback we got from local DNRs and stuff like that is, well, technically the guy that reeled it in caught it, but nobody would ever put that in writing or anything. Nobody, you know, the National Walleye Tour tried to get that a little more cleared up, and it just was so gray that they finally had to say, you know what, we're not going to deal with this right now. We're only going to give these guys a one person limit. Okay. So on the Mississippi River, a one person limit is four fish, one over 20. And that's why you saw that limit. And Wisconsin has the party fishing law. Green Bay, there's a lot of questions about Green Bay with the three fish. So on Green Bay, a limit is five fish, to the average person. But when you get a tournament permit, when you pull a tournament permit, the limit is only three. And that's why for so many years out there for tournaments, it was six fish, no call. So you had the one to play with. Well, that was because it was three and three for the two people.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Yep. And now they went down to three fish because that's a one person limit. They don't have to deal with the party fishing law. And now same thing with the upcoming North Dakota one, it's five fish. And I, from what I understand, North Dakota has a party fishing law, and so they're going to stop us at fly fishing again. So that's kind of what's going on with that. It's super frustrating.
Yeah, it's interesting, but and when you say frustrating, like from an angler's standpoint, like what are the moments that are frustrating? I mean, because it's still there's still a lot of things that are the same. You're still going out fishing, but when you know the frustrating parts, I guess I'm just a little bit curious about like about that. Is it just like during the tournament when you're catching your fish and you just know that you know like the decision making part of that process, like how would you describe when it gets frustrating on those kind of rule sets?
Well, I mean, every fish is a decision, right? So every single fish you bring into the boat, your decision on what to do with it could, ultimately, very seriously alter the results of your tournament and your season. And so, obviously, when things go good, they go good. You catch a 7 pounder and a 6 pounder and a 10 pounder on Green Bay, you're done. You know, they came in the right order. That was great. That was so fun. But then the guy in the next boat might have caught, he caught a 20 incher his first fish, and he had to say, gosh, I just don't know if I'm going to do better than this. And he throws it in the live well. Well, then his next two fish are 8 pounders. Well, if he went to caught that one first, well, he would have probably caught three giants too, but he happened to catch that one fish, almost, we'll say, accidentally. And that's how easy it is for you to get behind somebody. And at the same time, it can be easy to get in front of people too when you get a little luck to go your way.
In the spirit of competition, I mean, everybody's has the same rules, so the competition is relative. It's I mean, you're all dealing with the same rules, angler to angler. But that being said, like as a spectator, when I'm interpreting, the final results, and I'm cheering for my favorite anglers, and I'm seeing where they come in, and I'm listening to the interviews, and talking about, just not having any, no calls whatsoever. And then, I think the different fish limits, I guess like from as a fan, that probably doesn't matter as much as I think it does. Like I just, it was just always so easy to kind of sort of compare. When everything was five, it was just easy to think about and easy to interpret, I feel like these rules, the decision making, which is just like it might just purely be the mood, or like you might have just had a Snickers bar and be feeling, froggy, and you throw a fish back and it ends up being a good or bad decision. These are just like really interesting rule sets that have a huge impact on the big picture of like the championship and who ends up there, and even just, yeah, like who finishes in the top 10 each week. I mean, I don't know. I definitely think that it's kind of peculiar myself, I guess.
Yeah, and that's exactly what a conversation I had with a lot of people. I mean, look at the advantage of, say, a local that jumps into it. They have nothing to worry about. If they don't win, they don't win. If they don't cash check, they don't cash check, whatever. So they can hold out for those bigger bites. But now you got the guys that are playing for points, and we'll just say like the top 10 guys in points are fishing to try to win Angler of the Year. And now you got a whole list of guys that are either right on the bubble or just outside the bubble of making the championship. Every single fish they decide to put in the live well or throw back, has a little pull on their point total. So every fish can be just so frustrating for so many that it's I don't know, it's taking a little of the fun out of it, but it's at the same time it can be fun if it's going your way.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, peculiar, something that we got to work through, because whether you're, especially if you're in the tournament, but even as a spectator, even as a fan, I'd like to think that at least with a little bit of wiggle room, the best anglers are doing the best. The guys that have it figured out, are gonna finish high where they're supposed to. I just want everyone to finish where they're supposed to. When I see the interviews, I'm rooting for guys, and they finish. Like I just, yeah, I don't like hearing that it's frustrating stuff. But anyways, we're still talking fishing and all that. It is what it is.
And I think when you look at where the standings are now, you're right. The best guys are up at the top still. Yeah, there's a couple guys that stumbled hard, but I mean, look at down the list right now, and it's
Yeah.
The boys are
the heavy hitters
doing, doing good. Yep.
For sure, man. For sure. Well, then the other little extracurricular that kind of gets sprinkled into your, you know, your tournament season this year is, we're seeing you on tour level gold, man. I've had tons of conversations on here with all the guys. I had Brett Carlson on. I'd like never knew of that guy's existence prior to tour level gold being put together. And like, that he's an awesome dude. I love the stories. I love everything about that production. Now you're on it. Tell me a little bit about that experience for yourself.
Oh, it's been great. In just a lot of fun. It is such a nice production that they do. And, you know, Brett does a great job. He's, you know, they added Dusty and I this year, and Brett's known us for, well, heck, probably around 20 years already that he's been covering us. So, so yeah, he's got a lot of history with us, and Brett just does such a nice job. He's just so knowledgeable. But the one that really deserves all of the credit for this, I feel like, is Logan Breck. He's one of the camera guys that's on site jumping around and shooting and getting it all laid down. But he's also the kid that goes back to the studio when it's done and puts it all together. And he does just such a good job. It's just so cool. And I would tell people, I'm like, even if you don't fish, even if you've never fished a day in your life, just check it out, you know, just watch it. It's, you know, some of the scenery type stuff and storylines type stuff is just so well put together. Yeah. I think just Logan does an awesome job. 21 years old. He's unreal. So yeah, it's been fun. It's been, you know, it's been more work. You got to worry about it. There's a couple days in practice where you got to get lined up to have the camera in the boat and stuff like that. Or even in the tournament, if you don't have a camera following you, you got to try to get as much try to get it all on your GoPro. So there's a little bit more involved, but not bad. You know, just I'm used to being behind a camera, I guess, over the years. So it's really, you know, that part really doesn't bother me. It's just, it's taking a little getting used to. It's a little weird.
Yeah. I mean,
it's good.
You got a long time relationship with all these guys. So like, I'm sure it wasn't that, you know, a long of a conversation, but I'm curious how it went. Like who reached out to you and was like, hey man, we want you to be a part of it this season. And how did that conversation go?
It would have been John Hoyer that reached out to me. And, cause he's, you know, one of the owners of it, and he's responsible for getting the right people and, you know, making sure everything's running smoothly. So yeah, he reached out a little late. I think they didn't know if they were going to be able to add or not. And so, they didn't add Dusty and I till sort of later in the spring. It was kind of too late to use it as leverage for sponsorships and stuff like that. But, I kind of thought about not doing it for a little bit just because I haven't been doing that great in recent years. And I'm like, do I really want something else? But at the same time, I was like, it's a absolute no brainer.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's not really uncomfortable for me. And so I was like, why wouldn't you use it to promote your brand, promote me, myself, and then also, you know, my company and my sponsors. It was pretty much a no brainer for sure.
You know, these last couple of tournaments episodes that came out, one thing that, you know, is probably, you know, it's your life and it's totally on the front of your mind all the time, but it didn't really hit me so obviously until Brett mentioned it on one of the more recent episodes, just talking about you being a family man in comparison to, you know, a lot of these other guys that are represented, not just on this, you know, on this production, but just in high level tournament fishing, professional tournament fishing, you know, that, you know, being a husband and a father is not super common. I mean, there's definitely, you know, you see a lot of the young guys, the young guns that are doing good. They're fishing all the time and, you know, they're young, they're single, they've got all the time and they can spend all their resources on it. And you know, I imagine you were that guy once upon a time in your life. And you know, that was just something that kind of triggered me a little bit. And I was like, man, I really, really want to talk to Bill a little bit. And I want to have a chance to maybe dive into some of that, like some of those elements of your career a little bit. But for you, like your storyline on Tour Level Gold and just, you know, just your life in general, like when you hear people talk about that, did you know that that was going to be part of your storyline, how they were going to showcase you a little bit and bring your family into it?
I mean, I probably knew, I didn't know that they were going to, you know, make a storyline, but it, I told John right away, like, we should. I mean, I think it's something that, you know,
absolutely,
you don't have anything, you know, anyone else. And it's nothing, yeah, nothing against them guys. They're all great. But you look down the list of guys, yeah, on top of the points race, and you're right, you know, none of them, most of them are single, let alone have any kids or anything. And that's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. You know,
right.
I went through those years too. And I, that's probably when I guess when I was doing really, really good, at the tournaments is when I was that guy. But, and no, it just gets a little harder, you know, it's, I mean, so many things, you know, as you know, I mean, whether it's sports or school or vacations or doctor visits or anything, it's like a whole nother thing you got to deal with every single day. And so it just makes like tournament prep a little harder, makes leaving home a lot harder, you know, just it just cuts into your time that you have to invest in the sport. And you know, so it's certainly gotten harder that way for me, there's no question. But at the same time, it's been fun to, you know, to share that story with everybody else on Tour Level Gold. And, you know, everybody, a lot of guys know Drake and Lane, my two boys right now, pretty well. So they love seeing them, out there doing their thing. And they really have become like these little superstar sportsmen too, with not just fishing, but hunting too. They love to hunt and fish. And, yeah, I'm excited to be able to pass that down to them. It's always something, different seasons there. They just go right down the list and they love the outdoors. And that's super important these days, I feel like, because these kids and even mine are in this category too, don't get me wrong, but they get so tied up in screen time in, you know, tablets, iPads, YouTube, video games. And it's so hard sometimes to pull kids away from that because, you know, like, yeah, we had a little bit of that when we were growing up, but we probably loved it too. But what the technology and stuff these days is just, it's designed to suck them kids in, and that's what it does. It sucks them right in. And so anytime, I mean, I'm fortunate to live out in the country. We got a little land, and anytime I could, I don't even care what they're doing. There are a lot of times they're doing things they definitely should not be doing. They might have a saw or a lighter or who knows. And I'm like, whatever, just they're not in the house staring in front of that iPad. And so, you know, just to get them outside in general is super important. Get them dirty, let them do stuff. Even if it isn't perfect, you know, and you don't think they should be doing it, you know, let them get away with a few things, just get them out of the house. And, you know, for us, fishing has become a big thing. Actually, well, my 7-year-old, he was always kind of into it. And now this year, my 9-year-old is just crazy about it for some reason. And, so we've been having fun. They want to go fishing all the time, where when one didn't want to go, you know, say my 7-year-old, let's go to Fox Lake or wherever, you know, just to fish offshore. Well, if you have another kid that's absolutely throwing a fit, no, I'm not going. Well, you're probably not going. And so now that they're both into it, we've been in the boat a lot. We've been, you know, we got a lot of trips. We were just up at my brother's cabin and them guys fished for hours and hours and hours. And actually tomorrow morning, I'm taking them up to Lake Mille Lacs for the first time ever. They've really never had a good taste of like really good walleye fishing. And so we're going to go and try that. So pretty excited about that.
So you got a 7 and a 9-year-old, and I think there's a lot of dads or moms and dads, you know, listening to this that probably think about this stuff all the time, or just, you know, like I know, you know, for me, I've got a newborn and a toddler. So I'm getting into this, but I mean, in private, I'm asking every dad I can, you know, advice and things like that. Like, how do you, you know, being a, you know, you're a professional angler, much less just a, you know, like those of us that are just out here in the wild, you know, that fish as a, you know, a hobby, and we're, you know, trying to balance our own time where we can fish and try to be hardcore ourselves and you know, which maybe isn't conducive to, you know, bringing kids along fishing, but then you're trying to balance being a dad. And, you know, I mean, these are definitely, you know, the hot topics, you know, just out and about. So I guess, Yeah, man. Like, I'm curious about some of those things with you. If you have any personal experience or recommendations, you know, just thoughts that you've had. You're a professional angler. You've got, you know, you've got equipment that's like the best of the best of the best. But I, you know, I guess how often do you think about like how you came up in fishing and you, you know, how old you were when you realized that fishing was a great passion for you? And how much does that influence, you know, kind of your, how you raise your own boys?
Well, it's funny you said, yeah, having the best equipment and that kind of stuff and having the best of the best. And I think I you can't let that keep you from taking them fishing. And I look at what, you know, what my kids, how they kind of been going through this. It's kind of funny. We have a $100,000 boat sitting in the garage and they never really want to go in it very often. They want to fish off the dock. And no matter if we're on vacation or just at home, they want to go wherever they, you know, until this year, we'll say now they kind of want to get in the boat a little bit, but until this year, they never wanted to take the boat out. And I think that was important actually, because they just wanted to keep it simple. And my younger one, he would always say we'd be on vacation. We could have the boat sitting on the dock and Leech Lake, great walleye fishing is just right over there. And I just have to sit there on the dock and unhook sunfish. And it drives me nuts, but it's so important for them because, well, like Lane would tell you, he's like, why would we go on the boat, Dad? We catch them all day long off the dock. And I think you just got to kind of, you got to, if you are an experienced angler, you got to just really dumb it down and just remember that they don't need to catch an 8-pound walleye. You know, they just want to reel something in. And so I kind of always kept that in the back of my mind, you know, when I was trying to throw the sport into it, you'll always hear people say, don't push it on them, you know, don't jam it down their throats. And that's so true. There's going to be times when you're going to go home earlier than you wanted to go home. There's going to be times when, you know, you'll just get frustrated because you'll put all this effort into taking them somewhere and it'll be a complete disaster, or one will get hurt, or, you know, one's sick, doesn't feel good, even though he probably feels fine, but he misses his iPad. You know, there's going to be disappointing times in teaching them, but you just gotta, you know, you gotta keep that in mind. Don't overdo it and keep it simple. You know, literally going just fishing off docks anywhere, you know, anywhere, pretty much anybody. Well, most people have access to something, whether it's a riverbank or a public fishing pier or something like that. I mean, that's most of what I brought these kids up doing, is fishing off docks. And in the easiest is usually just a little bobber and a little hook on the end of that with, you know, if you can use a piece of real night crawler, you're going to catch fish all day long. And, you know, it doesn't matter the size usually. I mean, you look at them when they're reeling in the tiny little perch, they're smiling. They love it and they can't get enough of it. And even this weekend at my brother's cabin, same thing. You know, they wanted to catch a nice bass or two, but if they could reel in sunfish all day long, they're just happy with that. And one thing actually that reminds me, one little tip I'll give you is if you don't have any night crawlers, and this absolutely isn't a sponsor plug, it's just something that I come up with, that I kind of came across over the years. But if you have any Berkeley Max scent in your tackle box, and it doesn't matter the size, the shape of the tail or anything like that, but what I do when I don't happen to have leeches or night crawlers with me, I cut that Max scent into just little pieces and just put a little piece of that on any little kind of panfish hook or whatever. And it's incredible how much those sunfish and perch and stuff eat that stuff. And I figured that out by, you know, I fish the Max scent general a lot. Well, if you throw just a regular power bait general, or we'll say a Senko or a Yum Dinger or a stick bait of any kind, if you throw that out there, you'll get pecked by sunfish once in a while, right? You'll feel them kind of tugging on it. But when you put a Berkeley Max scent one on, of any, you know, general or any shape of tail, you'll instantly feel that the panfish just go bonkers over that stuff. They're always tugging on it to the point where it could be almost too annoying sometimes. But so yeah, a piece of Berkeley Max scent, cut it in little strips. And there's all kinds of other little bags of pre-made stuff that they make in the Gulp or the Power Bait line also. You know, a lot of that stuff could go a long ways, because you could even keep some of that in your truck, you know, and maybe a couple short rods and, you know, some of that fake bait, and you just might happen to be driving by a little pond or a fishing pier somewhere. And, you can just stop in and fish for 10 minutes or an hour or whatever. And I feel like just giving them small doses of success is so important. You don't sit out there all day, but you try to just get them some bites, no matter what kind of fish or how big they are.
Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, and the Northwest Angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Dude, that's super solid. I like that artificial. You know what I was thinking? It's like, I've dedicated, this podcast is only a few years old, but I've dedicated so many episodes to just speaking to, grown adult anglers and helping, gain confidence in using artificial bait, right? Because in the walleye world, it's like live bait, live bait. Man, your boys are 7 and 9 years old, and they probably have more confidence in artificial bait already than I did when I was 30 years old.
Yeah, they got into collecting tackle like their dad, and it's kind of frustrating actually, because they all of a sudden they want to spend their own money buying tackle, and I remember doing that too when I was a kid. But what they seem to forget is their dad has like a small Bass Pro Shops in his garage and has.
Take advantage of that.
They'll ever need.
Yeah, take advantage of that. Save your money. Buy land.
And so, yeah, no kidding. And so then they'll, they'll have all these lures, and they'll clip one on. They'll cast it once. And then, Dad, could you put this on? They'll cast maybe that one twice if you're lucky. Dad, could you put this one on? And I just go along with it. They're having fun with it, and yeah, it's all good. It's a lot of fun.
And when do you start introducing them? I mean, is it just, for you, has it always been as simple as just, as soon as they were, hardly big enough to wind a reel? I mean, were you getting them out there? Or like how much of this for you is just waiting to see them with a little bit of that desire to ask for it? And how much of it was you just like really calculated giving, introducing it, really trying to, kind of nudge them into it, right? Because I think, it's fair to say so much, many of us are dads and the hospital there, and you got your boy in your arms for the first time, and you're just thinking, man, I just, someday I can't wait to go fishing with you, right? But like how much of that do you really think about where it's a little bit more calculated? I mean, some of the stuff, like you say, it's like, we can probably simplify it, or it's easy for us to overthink some of that stuff. I appreciate all that. But for you, how much of it is kind of calculated? Like, how old were they when you were kind of trying to meet some of those milestones?
Well, for my boys, it was right away, of course, but I feel like, the younger they are, probably the smaller doses you give them of it. And, they get a little older, maybe they can stay out there a little longer. But yeah, for me, it was right away. Of course, just obviously I'm always fishing or doing something with fishing. So it'd be impossible not to have them out there trying it, even when they were probably 2 or 3 years old. And ice fishing too, ice fishing can be great for the kids too. Same thing. A lot of my buddies have big fish houses, and the kids go out there, and we go out there just as much for the kids to play and catch fish as we do for the adults. And yeah, it's just great to, great to get them going in the outdoors. And a big thing that we've really taken a lot of pride in and having fun with is the hunting too. Especially the turkey hunting, as you might have saw, we all shot big toms this year, and God, I love it. So turkey hunting, well, I hadn't really done it in the last 15 years or so. And it was funny how it all worked out. I'm like, one winter, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to bring Drake. I think he was 6 at the time or 7. I'm like, I'm going to take him turkey hunt next year and he's going to watch me shoot a turkey. It's going to be great. Well, I started looking into it. I'm like, well, there's not even a minimum age for turkey hunting in Minnesota. So I'm like, heck with me shooting the turkey. He's shooting the thing. And at the time I started, the only thing I really had available for him to shoot was a crossbow. So I had to, you know, get yourself a bog tripod that you can set up where, you know, it'll take some of the kick from a gun or a crossbow from the kids and it'll be nice and solid so they're not wiggling around. And you could put a crossbow on there, or we also now put just a 410 with a red dot scope on it. And that thing is so fun. And actually, I started shooting my turkeys with the 410 also. But
nice.
It's pretty simple, but make sure you get them practicing at home, whether it's the crossbow or a 410 or anything, you know, make sure they're comfortable shooting the gun. And, 410, we've been shooting when they're 7 years old. And so, it really doesn't, it's not that it kicks too hard or anything like that. Just shoot a little bit at home and get them out there. It's crazy that how easy it's a lot easier to get land for turkey hunting around here than deer, of course. So that's been kind of fun. We got a lot of good spots and it's fun scouting with the kids too. And, showing them kind of how they behave and things like that. And so, turkey hunting's been a great, great, great introduction to hunting for my kids. And now they've both been successful. Drake's got 2, Lane's got 1. And then deer hunting too. It's funny how I went from being a trophy hunter for quite a few years, you try to manage deer and grow deer and all that stuff, to now the only time I'm going to shoot a deer is if one of my kids are with. Like, I'm not filling my tag unless one of my kids gets to be there and enjoy it. And so it's funny how it's come full circle, or even with Drake last year, I almost shot this little 6-pointer because he was out there in the stand with me and he was getting all excited and he's like, never seen a buck chase a doe that aggressively, and he's just like, shoot it, you got to shoot it. Like, he flipped the switch, you have to shoot it. So I'm like, I guess I'm shooting it. In the back of my mind's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to fill my buck tag right now. I won't be able to hunt late season and all that. But as a dad, you're like, if he wants me to shoot it and he's going to be excited, let's do this right now. And fortunately, the buck ran behind a bunch of brush in the swamp, but I couldn't get a good shot at him. And so I ultimately got to hang on to my buck tag that I ended up eating anyway.
Sure.
But I did shoot a doe with Lane. And I tell you what, that doe or that night for him was, he still talks about it, one of the most exciting things that's ever happened to him in his life, to the point where he even has the doe skull, European mounted, that he keeps in his room and brings to school and stuff like that. So, just get them out there. It's, it can be super inexpensive, super easy. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just get them out there in small doses, no matter how old they are. And it ends up being just a great passion that they could have that keeps them away from a lot of the other noise in the world these days.
Yeah. And, even to kind of in this conversation, circle it back, talking about like tour level gold earlier, like that was kind of the thing that triggered, some questions that I have, these questions for you, but being involved in a production like that, talking about passing it on to the next generation and you being a dad and you're on camera, not your first time on camera, man, I've watched all those Next Bite episodes like 50 times that, it's learning from you, you and the boys over there, like with all that fishing TV that you've been involved in before, but tour level gold where it's more personal, it shows you, in your element, doing your thing, talking about these tournaments and how it is, for anybody that's not caught onto it yet, just go back and binge watch it last season and this season too. You'll see Bill on this season 2, but that's something that your boys are going to be able to watch and comprehend, and your grandchildren, right? It's the digital world. This stuff lives forever. You talk about it being an easy decision, professionally, that it's an opportunity for exposure, and that's good for you and your brand and your sponsors, all good things that we all, understand. But you had to be thinking at the same time, this is, or maybe it was during, or something, somewhere along the line, you had to have had the thought that, you know, this is kind of cool, almost like a responsibility of mine. When they ask me, I got to say yes, because you're not going to have that many opportunities to be involved in a high production, you know, piece of content that is going to live forever for your boys to watch and your grandchildren to watch. You know?
Yeah, the boys loved it. So, well, they watch a lot of YouTube. So I was finally, they weren't in episode one, but I knew they'd be up in episode two. So they got filmed and stuff like that. And they were so excited because they were going to finally be on YouTube. And they're like, all right, I hope people get to watch me on YouTube. So then they watched the episode three, it would have been. And I said, I wasn't with them when they watched it. I said, what'd you think, Drake? And he said, yeah, no, I liked it. But he's like, they could have had me on there a little more. So I told Logan, I said, Drake needs a little more airtime next time. He's a little disappointed. He's not getting his money's worth out of this whole deal. So,
oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, no, it is fun to, you know, to share the story. Cause it's different. Like you said, it's hard. You know, a lot of the guys, they're either young and not married yet, or they're older and their kids have moved on and done their own thing. So I feel like I'm right in the middle. And yeah, it's tough. You know, it's helps to have a good wife that can take care of things when I'm not home. And so that's a huge deal. You know, it's always hard on her when I'm gone, because the kids like to act naughty and take advantage of her a little bit, or the babysitters. And, you know, of course, so then I got to hear about that every night, and that's frustrating. But one thing that's helped me be able to keep doing this is I am a stay-at-home dad, so I'm with the kids you know, all summer long pretty much when I'm home. You know, I still travel for that 1 or 2 weeks a month, but it makes leaving a little easier, because I just got to spend a ton of time with them guys. And now this time of year, you know, I try to put work aside more and just screw around and go fishing with those guys and with the kids and with my wife Sam when she can and stuff like that, because pretty much March, April, May, even June nowadays for me is just meat grinder season with rigging and stuff. And so this time of year, we just try to get out there and enjoy the outdoors.
Sort of the undertones of a lot of things, you know, the recommendations and just talking about, raising your children and into the outdoors and introducing them and all that is you know, the small doses and don't calculate the value of an opportunity on your own standards. You know, doesn't have to be 8-pound walleyes in a big fancy boat and all that. I think that stuff is just so, man, it's really important. I think, you know, a lot of us would be lying to ourselves in the mirror if we thought that we didn't do that, you know, on ourselves, or, you know, to kids or just any level of mentorship. You know, if you're taking your girlfriend or your spouse or other family members out fishing that are, you know, where you're that mentor, you're the person that does it a lot. So you're, you know, your time or, you know, but just not getting overly worried about calculating the opportunity that it is. But then on the flip side, like you say, giving it to them in those doses. You know, you're a professional angler. I can imagine that in a different, you know, family, a different dynamic, a different, you know, version of yourself, you could probably fish so much away from them. That's the thing that takes their dad away from them. You could get home. They could want to go fishing to bond with you, and you take them out somewhere and you bring them into big waves and you hold them out there too long and they're not dressed right, so they're cold or they're hot or whatever. And was there any point in time so far being a dad where you were worried that you were going to do too much and maybe run them off of it? Or has there ever been a time where you were concerned that, maybe just because of your own behavior that your kids weren't going to like fishing? Maybe that was a worry. Or what would be your thought on that?
I can't think of any particular time off the top of my head, but you try to avoid that as much as possible by preparations, right? It's like you have to prep yourself for a kid's little fishing outing just as much as you have to prep yourself if you're going to fish the Bassmaster Classic. Like, you got to be ready for, obviously food's a big thing, right? Snacks, yeah. You bring more crap with you than you know you're going to ever use, but just throw it in there and have it in there just in case. You know, stuff to eat, stuff to drink, of course. It seems like more often than not when they're fishing and stuff or hunting, they get to have some pop and things that aren't as healthy for them. And that's part of the experience, though, right? Stopping at that gas station and buying candy and pop and maybe some tackle, and that's a big deal to them, because then next time they go fishing, they know they get to stop at that gas station and they get to get a little more tackle and they get to have a little more sugar. It's all part of giving the whole experience. And I guess maybe I've done a good job at it, where I can't think of any times when I was a little like worried that I was gonna put a negative effect on them at all. I do remember a time with Drake when we were duck hunting. And actually, it was when I was just about to have knee surgery. So he had to, I think he was 7 years old, he had to go out in his kayak and pick up the decoys and the dead ducks. So I would shoot the ducks. He'd have to go get them like a dog.
Nice. That sounds great.
And then he had to go and pick up the decoys. Well, the first time we did it, it was fine. It was warm out and he had fun with it. Well, the next time we were out there, it was probably, 40-ish degrees, almost freezing, and you could tell he was like frozen and not happy. And but there was no other choice. I couldn't go out there because my knee was so messed up. And so I did get a little worried that day that I put a very negative experience maybe in the back of his mind, but it didn't slow him down at all. We got through it, and I just made sure I ran him up to the truck, midway, and then right after, and the truck was running and it was warm, and we got through it. But yeah, I just think, just trying to prep for everything that you might run into, whether it's an umbrella, I feel like an umbrella is a big thing to have in your boat, obviously if it would start raining on them. But even just to set up to make a little fort in the boat, and just realize that if you're out there, if planning on being out there for a long time, you may not get the full time out of the kids. And so a lot of times I could just put the kids on the ground on a blanket and they could watch my phone or play whatever games on the phone or the iPad, and then maybe you get to fish by yourself for an hour or two. I used to have a Bimini top on my boats always. I didn't get one on this new one, but Bimini top was a huge deal for getting kids out there, especially when they're babies, just being able to kind of always be have a spot where you can keep that baby out of the sun, and in the kids of any age, out of the sun, even myself out of the sun. I grew to love that Bimini top. I'd use it for pre-fishing and stuff like that. I'd get made fun of left and right, but I know darn well they were all jealous that they're frying like bacon out there, and I was nice and comfortable, had a clear mind, and I was sitting under that Bimini top just pulling bottom bouncers or something, So, but yeah, yeah, you just got to put some thought into the preparations, and hopefully you won't give many negative experiences.
How old were you when you, even if you thought back to like the first time you said that you wanted to be a professional fisherman, how old were you when you thought that?
Oh boy. Gosh, I really don't know. So the first tournament I was ever in my life, I was 15 years old, and my dad worked at this big plant or whatever. They'd have an annual bass tournament. There was a two divisions or whatever. You had to be related to or work at this place or related to somebody that works at the place. And anyway, I won that tournament, first one I was ever in. And I got like a 3-foot trophy, and I think if I remember right, it was like $90 in cash. And I was like, holy crap, that's kind of cool. You can get paid to go fishing, huh? And I think that was probably the one that got me, that at least planted the seed anyway, right? I think at that I didn't even own a boat or anything at that time. But yeah, I started fishing tournaments then, more regularly, even when I was like 18, 19 years old, into my 20s. And
But I mean, when you were growing up, it was, you want to be like a professional football player or something, or do you want to be a professional fisherman? Like, it wasn't even before then.
well, I don't think so. I don't think I really even understood that was a thing when I was that little,
That's probably a reality, right? It's a different time now where we're all
Yeah,
overexposed.
and I think now kids probably do, and a big part of it is probably high school and collegiate fishing teams. I think the high school fishing program is gonna really, and it already has obviously, but I think that's gonna be a big deal in growing the tournament side of the sport. Yeah, so yeah, I really can't think of, if I was like 10 years old, maybe actually, maybe I can remember something that was kind of funny. Me and my buddy Keith used to, my grandpa would put the canoe in, and we'd always be able to fish off the dock, but when he put the canoe in for us, it was like a big deal. We got to go across the lake, and I can remember we would catch, where I'm sure there were probably like 3/4 pound bass, but every time we'd catch one, we would talk like we were filming a TV show, like we were talking like Bill Dance or whoever, Hank Parker and stuff like that. So yeah, maybe it was embedded a little deeper in me back then than I think, but yeah, I don't know. It just kind of.
Your boys are 7 and 9. I mean, are you waiting to see that in them? I mean, they're overexposed, because they really, really witness the walleye tournament scene at the, through you. So, I mean, are they talking about that already?
Yeah, I think, well, 'cause they get, they obviously see it firsthand, have their whole life. So they're gonna know, and yeah, they're gonna want to be the tournament fishermen and win tournaments and all that. There's no doubt. So yeah, they definitely see it, and yeah, you could hear it, when they talk, and they have all the terminology and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
So yeah, no, it's kind of cool. And they're more bass fishermen. It's funny, 'cause Drake, he even told me not too long ago, he's like, "Dad, I kind of like bass fishing." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's cool." He's like, "Well, I know that you're a walleye guy. I don't want to be mean and say there's anything, because I like those too." But he's like, "I think if I did tournaments, I'd probably do bass tournaments." And I'm sitting there thinking, "Well, yeah, that's a good idea, because there's a lot more money in that." And absolutely, I want you to fish bass tournaments. And they may. I mean, who knows? They'll probably be using forward-facing sonar in the next couple of years, because I, actually, the next couple of days, to be honest, when at
Yeah,
Lake
they're
Mille
going to be
Lacs,
up on Mille Lacs the next couple of days. That's
I'm going
awesome.
to try to get them doing that. So, yeah, no, they, I think they're gonna want to do it. And you look at like, Jason Shakir, his son Jay, that's a cool story. And Pat Nye's son Adam Nye, he's a professional bass fisherman. That's a really cool story. And just those guys, probably both professional, both have dads that were professional walleye fishermen, and their sons go on to be pro bass guys. I think that's pretty cool. And I could see probably my kids, at least one of them. And to be honest, I don't know which one it's going to be yet. But I could definitely see one of my kids probably, follow in those steps and try to, and maybe they'll be walleye, who knows? But I mean, obviously, if you can get ahead of the game, the fishing game early, and be one of the knowledgeable young high school and college anglers, that'll be a good way to pave your way into professional bass fishing. But it's tough now, and obviously there's a lot of controversy. I don't want to say it's tough. Well, it's tough, but the big part of it is it's so saturated. You got all these kids that want to do it. Well, there's only so many spots, so it's getting tough that way. It used to be a big thing down south. Well, now you got, the whole country. I mean,
Yeah,
look
it's
at
big everywhere.
the Midwest is pumping out probably some of the best, bass fishermen there ever was now, and in Canada, of course, so, and Japan.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's tough because there's only so many spots. But yeah, you get them started young enough, and they should have a chance at it anyway, right?
You're talking about getting into bass versus walleye. I don't think I've ever asked any full-time walleye pros that have been doing this a long time, like, How come you didn't get into bass fishing? What got you into walleye fishing versus bass fishing?
Me probably. Well, I think it's so rich in our blood here in Minnesota, the walleye fishing part of it. And it seemed like more, for like the state level circuits and stuff like that you kind of start with, there's more walleye choices than bass. And so, I guess I just started fishing walleye tournaments earlier, but I've always loved bass fishing, and I've fished enough bass tournaments too over the years. So it's something I like to do. Or even like around home, my lakes that I have close to my house here, they most of them have walleyes in them, but they're so hard to catch in the summer that they're hardly worth targeting. And so if I got a couple hours to go fishing, I'm going bass fishing. And same thing with the kids now, they just like the action of it. But we're not that close to like really good walleye fishing anywhere, so that's why I do take them bass fishing more often. So yeah, I guess, and for me personally, I know what the potential is for like sponsorship contracts if they're going to fish bass compared to walleye. Yeah, of course I'm going to push him into bass fishing.
Yeah, fair enough, right? Fair enough. Right on, man. Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, yeah, I could, if I had your time for 3 or 4 hours, man, I could just pick your brain on all that sort of stuff, man. But I just appreciate the personal conversation. I mean, it's, not everybody, shares that personal side of them, but I think it's really inspirational, and I think it's a really it's truly is an opportunity. Like you said, talking to John and the storylines that would ultimately be featured on Tour Level Gold, and adding that in as a big part of your storyline. I mean, that's not easy for everybody to do, to kind of a little bit vulnerable and kind of, bring your family, the family element into it. But I really appreciate it, as a father myself, and I totally look up to that stuff. And seeing your boys running down the dock and big smile, jumping in the boat, and grabbing them fish, no hesitation, like all that, the pictures on social media, the videos, like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I mean, that's probably not why I had kids, but once you have kids, that's what you think a lot about, being an outdoorsy dad and wanting to pass that down, and do it in a good way that it's healthy and wholesome and they like it, regardless of being good at it or any of those types of outcomes. It's all what we all love to do. So being able to pass it down well is a big part of it. So I really appreciate it, Bill. And there's a ton of takeaways in this that I think are really important for all the dads and mentors out there to be thinking about, for sure, man. That being said, we've got Lake Sakakawea coming up, which is out in our stomping grounds, which I'm really excited about that one. But also, like, the way that your those Tour Level Gold episodes kind of air, you fish a tournament, and it takes a couple of weeks to get produced, and they come out typically in and around the next tournament. So you guys are just out in Green Bay. Any teasers there, anything we can expect to see, on some of those episodes as we head into this, the fourth stop there out on Lake Sakakawea, as far as the Tour Level Gold stuff?
Well, yes, they will release it right before the next National Walleye Tour event. They kind of do that strategically because it's the hype is built and the guys are out there pre-fishing and whatnot. So yeah, you get ready for episodes. We'll be 5 and 6. I talked to Logan on that episode, we knew it was so frustrating, it was so hard to catch a walleye even in practice or in the tournament that, it was kind of a drag. I was hoping that they would still get some good footage, but like I told Logan, I'm like, you know what though, this is from the outside looking in, this is probably pretty damn interesting. Like, especially that first day of that tournament, I'm like, probably the most interesting day ever, because we didn't know who was going to zero, who was just going to be on them, and you knew it was going to throw 3 8-pounders in there, and everything in between. It was so interesting that it was the strictest walleye limit ever in professional walleye fishing, on top of the worst pre-fish / tournament that many of us that have been doing this for 20, 30 years have ever seen. So I think that was a good storyline in itself. So I'm sure Logan will nail it. He'll have a little more time to work on this one. The other one, it was pretty quick turnaround. So it seemed like it was only a few weeks in between tournaments, but really looking forward to the next event. Like, Sakakawea is definitely one of my favorite places to be. I've only been there a couple times, and it's just so beautiful out there. There's so many fish, and unlike Green Bay, they'll actually maybe bite when you throw a lure at them. So I think that's really exciting. Should be a good event. And yeah, we're chugging along here. It's crazy how fast the season goes. It seems like it just started, and it's, we're already over the hill, yeah, coming to our last qualifier already. So.
Yeah, you guys start so early. I mean, and this year you didn't even start as early as, even a couple of previous years. But, man, you guys start so early for sure. But, yeah, you made a good point there. And I interviewed Jacob Bell after that Green Bay tournament. He had a great finish. And I didn't even know you guys rolled together. I thought that was a really fun thing for me to learn.
Sure.
But I think you're right. Especially when you look at, the industry and the impact, like, the context of, especially you look at the fans, you look at, you know, people that are just paying attention to it and, you know, just how the industry works, it's marketing, it's, you know, what, you know, high level tournament anglers, you know, perceived as being the best of the best in the country or, you know, in the world, walleye anglers in the world where walleyes live. And you're going to one of the, you know, most marquee, like the most well-known big walleye factories in North America, in, you know, Green Bay on Lake Michigan. And you look at historic tournament, NWT tournament weights from the NWT, it's giant bags, takes so much weight to be in the top 10, or it's so much weight to cash a check and all this. But if you don't, you know, sort of give context or give an opportunity to sort of explain, you know, the rule change is one thing, but also the context of Green Bay in June when the alewives are spawning and just how brutally tough that bite is, I think that a lot of casual viewers, a lot of casual fans would not be able to understand that very much. And it would have really kind of been a sad opportunity lost. But what, you know, I really wanted to try to accomplish that with my interview with Jacob, was to have him sort of, you know, kind of explain why it was such a, just a crazy tough deal. And I thought he did a really great job, and it was really, really cool. He's obviously a really humble guy. I mean, because he did something pretty extraordinary, and he didn't get too excited about talking about it when I was talking to him. Like, he just did a good job explaining it, and what a cool tournament that he had. But yeah, like, and then tour level gold, like, I'm really excited about seeing those, and just the potential for people to just, you know, take it in and just see it, because the context in a tournament like that, is kind of profound a little bit. I mean, otherwise you just think that a whole bunch of really top end anglers would go. And I mean, look at the names, the amount of guys that zeroed out, like really, really talented individuals that have done really well on that body of water historically and other times of year and stuff like that, that, man, oh man, it just didn't look like fun. It looked like a bunch of people that were just whipped at the post for 10 days doing those like pre-fish interviews and stuff, you know, like watching the NWT social media pages leading up to that tournament. I was like, man, just turn the camera off. These guys look like a bunch of, you know, you're just like interviewing a bunch of dogs in cages at a puppy mill. It's like this, like these guys just look, it's just brutal, brutal what they're putting themselves through. It, you know, here's a, hey, how's it going? How's the bite? What do you predict for weight? You know, it's like, man, these guys, oh man, it just looked so tough. But, you know, yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of casual viewers, a lot of people that kind of look to the information and, you know, you got sponsors, you're representing them and, you know, people are, you know, paying attention to this stuff and, you know, putting the information, like myself, putting the information into my own fishing and learning from it and formulating buying decisions and all those sort of things, right? That, you know, the marketing as it moves forward in a tournament like that, if you didn't have any context with it, and it just looked like everybody took the week off, you know?
Yeah, right.
But anyways, yeah, man. Well, cool, Bill. I really appreciate the time, dude. I really appreciate the time. I know, you know, kind of a little while coming, I really wanted to do one with you this spring, but yeah, it just wasn't right. And it's fun to, I think it all kind of comes out in the end though, because shows like this are really important to me. It's really important to this podcast that we, you know, we feature great fishing conversations. We talk about technical information. We highlight fishing opportunities. But there's a big, big, big element out there that's so important that, you know, we're all thinking about, we're all living, you know, the mentorship side of things and having good conversations, you know, about being a mentor or being a father and bringing your kids up in fishing and having a, you know, a good approach to that. That being said, we'll sign this off. Unless something's eating at you, bring it up, go ahead. But we'll sign this off like I always do. Promote yourself, promote any content, any sponsors, anything that you want to throw out there at the end of this thing. If people want to get in touch with you, if they have questions or any of that stuff, go ahead.
Awesome. Yeah, like usual, you can find me on social media, Bill Shimoda Facebook or Bill Shimoda Instagram. And of course, yeah, keep following along with Tour Level Gold. It's going to be a lot of fun to finish this season out. And yeah, lastly, I guess just get them kids out there and don't expect a lot. Keep it simple. keep it a bobber and a piece of crawler, a beetle spin, a little swim bait, anything that you can throw out there that's not going to get gobbed up with weeds every cast, and that's going to catch, you know, a lot of different species of fish. Just get them out there and bend the rod as much as you can. Take them hunting. Go buy a 410 and a tripod. Get out there turkey hunting. You can shoot ducks that way. You can shoot squirrels that way. Take them deer hunting with you. And, yeah, make little monsters out of them. It happens quick. And then just get them outside, whether it's, you know, walking around down at a creek or a beach or out in the woods when the mosquitoes won't carry away. They love being outside and having adventures. And, yeah, do that, and you'll be a happy dad just like this one. And that's all I got for you. Thanks for having me, Taylor.
Man, I appreciate it, dude, and we'll be in touch. Thanks, Bill.
You bet. Thanks, buddy.
All right, we'll talk to you.